Cats, hand wraps and headaches is the inspiring, surprising and sometimes shocking story of Irish boxing coach Paddy Fitzpatrick, a pro boxer who found fame as a trainer of world-class fighters, including the huge rematch between George Groves and Carl Froch. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from somewhere, I think, in the UK, the man himself, Paddy Fitzpatrick. Paddy, good afternoon to you.
What's happening, dude? You good?
I'm very good, thank you. Whereabouts do we find you today? Where are you today?
I'm down at home, brother, in Swindon.
So tell me a little bit about what you're up to and this book. I mean, why did you decide to put the book together?
Well, that was down to my buddy, Teach. He's the guy that actually wrote it, Lee Simpson. He's been training at my gym for around 4 years, and he said to me around maybe a year and a half ago, he said, I'd like to write a book. He said, would you be up for it? So I said, why not? Let's give it a shot. So it's all been down to him. He put the book together. He wrote it, and he got the deal for it. So hats off to Teach.
Excellent. So tell me a little bit about how you got into boxing, because you were a boxer before you were a coach.
I got into it the same as many kids, brother. You're just looking for something you can connect to. And when I was around 13, I found a gym in Limerick City called St. Francis Boxing Gym, and that's my favorite gym. That's my favorite gym in the world. So I went in there, fell in love with it there, and I've been in love with it ever since.
And what gave you why did you want to become a pro boxer? What was the step up from amateur to pro like for you?
Well, that was too big for me to take, especially I had finished in the amateurs in Ireland, and then I left home and I had moved over to the UK. I more or less abused myself for 2 years with any drug I could get my hand on. There was only one or two exempt from that list. Then I kind of fell into the pros. But it served a purpose. It cleaned me up. So that was it. Then I was in the pros. Didn't do anything as pros. Shouldn't have been in there. But I always loved the boxing. And then happened to meet Freddie by chance when I was in Jersey, Channel Islands. He was getting Steve Collins ready for the first fight with Ben. We got to know each other then. And at the second fight with Ben, he said to me, would I like to come back to LA and start working with him?
And what was your reaction to, I mean, Freddie Loach is, you know, a legendary trainer. And, you know, what was your reaction like when they said, do you want to come over to the States?
I thought he was high. I thought, what's he offering me that for? I was delighted. It's like Santa Claus saying, do you want to come to the grotto, wouldn't it? And go see where the toys are made and where it all happens. So, I said yes. I snatched his hand off. Still didn't think it was real until he told me to meet him in the airport. Steve was fighting Frederick Sellier. He said, meet me tomorrow morning in the airport. I'll have your ticket. I thought, well, I'll show up and see what happens. I showed up and he was there like it was just matter of fact. Hey, how you doing, Paddy? You good? That was it.
And what was
flew back and that was it.
What was the atmosphere like around Steve Collins? Because he was such a great fighter.
Yeah, but Steve was definitely, he was one of those, he would make everyone feel comfortable too. He could be walking through the town in St. Helier in Jersey on his phone, and he could see somebody wanting to approach him while he was on his phone, and I've seen this numerous times. And instead of continuing to walk, he'd stop still, finish his conversation, and then chat to the people. So I met Freddie first, and Fred said, you can come up and watch Steve train. I was never involved with anything got to do with Steve, but that was where I first kind of met Freddie and Steve. It was great. And like I said, after he fought Sellier, we flew back to LA.
What was it like going into the Wild Card gym? Because it's, you know, it's legendary.
Yeah, I had told myself to keep your composure. For whatever reason, Fred had said, do you want to come back and work with me, be my assistant? I just took it that he knew what he was up to, so I'll just follow his lead, because I sure as hell didn't know what I was up to. So I thought, well, he knows what he's up to, I'll follow his lead. He's saying to me, come back, be my assistant. There's obviously he sees enough that he's making that offer and paying for me to come back. So, but I told myself, if I'm going to be any use to him or the fighters that he works with coaching, I can't be shocked and surprised when I'm around these guys. I've got to treat it like it's every day and just calm, matter of fact. So I convinced myself not to act surprised no matter who I met, and just to be cool as if they were everyday people. And that made it easier, because you could have got carried away very quickly, the amount of talent and top-class fighters that he had in there. I could have lost myself quite easily.
And what's the atmosphere? I mean, such a change going from the UK to LA. I mean, how was the lifestyle for you?
That's cool. I've always travelled since I've been, you know, I used to thumb my way around 60, 70 miles away from home when I was 11 years old back home. I left home at 15, so I've always travelled. It was just nice to go somewhere else and get that different experience. The everyday life living there was pretty cool. I lived in the gym for the first year, so I used to sleep in the boxing ring. We'd finish up at night and I'd sweep it out, clean it, put down a sleeping bag and go to sleep there. And it was cool because I'd wake up in the morning, polish the mirrors, fighters would start coming in, and we'd get to work and we'd finish around 3 p.m. And it was just constant boxing, just all day, every day. So I was in my elephant, in my element, should I say. Not my elephant.
Your
my element.
Yeah. And of course, you got to meet the greatest of all time.
Yes. Yeah, when I was working with Lally. It was cool enough to hang out with him in a few different places, a few different times. Yeah, he's enjoyable to be around.
I mean, when you first meet Muhammad Ali, what was your reaction? I mean, because, you know, there is nobody like, you just have to mention the name Ali and everybody stops.
Yeah, but don't forget, I had convinced myself when I started with Freddie not to be surprised by whoever I met. So by the time I'd met Muhammad, would have been 4 years after I'd been living there.
Right.
So Lally had she was announcing her fight for, I think it was Susie Taylor, her first world title. And it was also the grand opening of her gym in Las Vegas. So I knew he was coming to be the special attraction. And they did the press conference, and there was queues down the street. So I avoided going anywhere near him because I knew that he was going to be sat and busy with all these people all day. And when the gym shut later on, I was in there sweeping the gym. Lally was doing something behind the counter, and he was sat just on a seat beside ringside, and he calls me and he goes, "Hey," he says, "come here." So I walked over and I goes, "What's up?" And he goes, "Come on, come here, sit down." So I sat down. He goes, come here, lean in." So I lean in. He went, "Are you a pimp?" And I went, I said, "What?" And he went, "Are you a pimp?" And I went, "No, I ain't a pimp. I said, I train your daughter." And he just started giggling to himself. And that was it. I said hello to him briefly. I stood up. I said, "Look, I'm going to carry on cleaning up." I said, "I'll catch you again." He goes, "Okay." So I carried on cleaning up. And then a couple of hours later, I was driving down the strip in Vegas, because I only lived 5 minutes away from it. And I was driving down just to kill some time. And my phone rang. And it was Lally's sister, Hannah. And she said, "Hey, Paddy, where are you?" I said, "I'm just driving down the strip." And she goes, "Daddy wants to see you." She goes, "Can you come see him?" And I said, "Okay." I said, "Where are you?" So she gave me the name of the hotel, and she gave me the name they were staying under and that. And I arrived upstairs, and there was Hannah, which is Lally's sister. There was Lonnie, his wife, Muhammad, and Howard Bingham, the photographer. And I went in, I sat down with him, and then he said he's hungry. He said, let's sit up here and eat some ice cream. So he got some ice cream, and then the door knocked, and it was Lally. And then Lally walked in, and she said, "Daddy, what's he doing here?" And he goes, "I want to talk to him." And she went, "Oh, no, I don't like the idea of this." And he was going, "I want to talk." And then she said, "Hey, Daddy, do you know Paddy's married to a Jamaican?" And he looked at me with big shocked eyes, and he went, "You like black girls?" And I said, I said, "Well, you know chocolate looks better with vanilla on top." And he just creased up laughing. And then Lally went, oh, my God. So she left. Then Lonnie went into, Howard Bingham left. Lonnie went into the bedroom. She had to make some calls. And we sat there and kicked it for 2.5 hours. And we talked about women, boxing, and religion in that order. That was the first time.
Absolutely precious. Why did you decide then? Because things were going well. You're living in Las Vegas, having a great time. Why did you decide to go back to Europe? Because you went to Germany, didn't you, first?
Yeah, I went to Germany for our son. Me and Kerry's son was born in Las Vegas. He's 15 now. And he got we didn't want to raise him up going through, metal detectors to go to school.
Right.
We didn't want to do it. And, Vegas, LA, Texas is that. And we were there primarily because that's where I'd been for 10 years. And like you said, the boxing was going good and things were good. So there was no reason to move. But as soon as we had DJ, we started, thinking quite a bit ahead because we didn't want to move when it was just time. We wanted to settle somewhere where he could grow up and enjoy living. I went to Germany for a year because I got a contract over there and then decided to move back to the UK because I have a soft spot for Swindon. And I wanted to end up doing something with the youth back here for the same reason that I wanted to leave Vegas to have DJ to somewhere decent to grow up. I wanted to see if I could move somewhere and then maybe do a little bit with the youth around there the same way. So decided to come home.
And you set up your own gym in Swindon. I mean, how difficult was it to get young fighters and start training them and managing them and getting them to have shots at titles?
Well, there was nothing happening in Swindon's developed a lot of good fighters over the years. But when it got to the business of boxing in Swindon, Ricky Porter was promoting here. I think the last time Ricky would have promoted would have been the late 80s in Swindon, maybe around 88 or something. And there was nothing happening in Swindon since then. And even though there had been pro fighters in Swan, like I said, and good fighters coming out, they were kind of coming out one at a time. But there was nothing here to start having something that the talent would want to stay here and grow, and therefore you're growing the talent within the town itself. So around 13 years ago, I wanted to come back. I got asked, would I be interested in going to London? I said no for the same reasons that we left Vegas. We didn't want to raise DJ in a big city like that. Swindon, I have a good connection to because I moved here in 86. Moved back again and just thought, there's lots of talent here. It's always produced talent. I want to open up a gym and give it a chance to develop something from the ground up. I've always been a huge admirer of Brendan Ingle because not only did he develop fighters from seed, but he was always involved with his youth as well and developing them as men and women. So that was appealing to me. And I just rolled the dice, opened the gym, put my best foot forward, and it worked.
And how did you start working with George Groves then? What was the meeting to that? Because obviously people will know those huge fights a couple of years. I mean, how long ago is it now? Is it 5 years ago?
The first one would have been November 2013, and then the rematch would have been, I don't know what it was it June or July 2014? Well, when I came back to get some paperwork done, I came back from the States for 6 months or 3 months or something to get some paperwork done in around 99. And I was working with this dude that I met up in London who is an amateur at Lodge. What's the gym up there? Oh, David Hayes' old gym.
Right.
Fitzroy Lodge. And I was in there working with my friend and Mickey, who is passed away now, who used to run it, he came up and said, hey, do you want to do a bit of mitts? Help me out, do a bit of mitts with this dude over here. And at the time, I think he was around 17 or maybe 19, and it was David. And so I started doing mitts with David for, I don't know, a month or so. just got to know David through that, and then I went back to the States. So when I moved back here, I just sent Dave a message going, hope you, you know, how's things, hope you're cool. And he sent me a message going that he, him and Adam would be down in Redden one day, come hook up and catch up. So we caught up, and then I started chatting to Adam, and me and Adam had a lot of great, you know, 3-4 hour long conversations about boxing and the philosophy behind it. And then when he was getting ready, when George was getting ready to fight the Gale, I bumped into Adam at an amateur show up north somewhere. And he said to me, he said, I got 2 fights I'm signing soon. He said, David against Klitschko and George against the Gale. He said, what do you think? And I said, I hope it's not Vitaly that you're fighting. And I said, if George can keep his composure, he beats the Gale. And he said, what way do you think he beats him? And we just had a chat. And then he said, you fancy coming down to London next week into the gym? I said, no worries. So I came down, and I just gave my input on one part of it. And he says, you know, do you want to do a bit of that with him? And I did. And we just kind of stayed connected like that. So I was involved just in that fight in a small way. And then I'd done a bit more with him and Adam for the Glencoff Johnson fight. But then I was back here in Swindon after that, do my own thing. So I hadn't seen either of them for a long time. And then George just texts me and says, I had seen it announced that he was fighting Carl. And then he texts me going, are you about tomorrow? And I said, yeah. And he says, can I come see you? And I said, no problem. And then I see announced that day that Adam had left him. And then he just asked me, do I think he can beat Carl? And if I do, would I train him? And I said, yeah, no problem. And that was it.
And when you actually get to a big fight like that, I mean, how much input do you have ringside when your man's out there?
The input becomes greater the longer you're with them, because the deeper your relationship, isn't it? So you can pick up on little nuances, and you can adjust them with a word instead of 2 or 3 rounds. So the input, you know, at the end of the day, when the fighter's in there, you just got to let them fight. You know, you can instruct them and guide them in between rounds. You can prepare them before fight night. But on fight night, you just got to let them fight, and that's it. So the input, like I said, it's greater the longer you're with them, but it's ultimately down to the fighter.
And what's it like? What was it like walking into that, I presume, the third and final rematch in front of 80? Because it really captured the imagination. 80,000 people, Wembley Stadium, doesn't get much bigger than that.
No, it doesn't get much bigger, but whenever, for me, on a personal note, whenever I would arrive at any venue, doesn't matter how many's there, I walk into the venue. When I get there, I get in the ring, check the ring, see if there's any dips, anything else, how tight the ropes are, everything else that I want to get a point to the fighter and make them aware of in the changing room. Then I'll come out as close to our fight as possible so I can, you know, get a feel for what the venue feels like with the crowd out there and what they sound like and what it's up. So then when you're walking out, you're not kind of being shocked by anything.
Right.
There's no new feeling hitting you. There was only one time that I've ever got shocked when I went to do the ring walk, and I think it was Lally was fighting. I think it might have been when she fought Christy Martin, possibly, and Muhammad was ringside, or it might have been a different fight. I think it was in Louisville, whoever she fought in Louisville, and Muhammad was ringside. And when we went to walk out, there was like 10,500 there. We went to walk out, and they just all started chanting Ali Bumbaye. So I took a half step, because I always would be stood beside her. So I took a little half step back to shake my shoulders before I stepped back in. And when she looked around, she hadn't noticed I had gone missing. But that was just, when you hear everyone chant that and you know where that come from, sent a shiver. But so, besides that, you get used to it, so it's not a shock when you go out there.
So you said a bit earlier, because, you know, it's the brutal sport, but you talked about the philosophy of boxing. What is it about, you know, boxing? It's a brutal sport. People get badly hurt, but there is, and people talk about this, the nobility of the game.
Well, it's the raw sport, isn't it? The raws. It's as close to Mother Nature as you'll get, isn't it? It's law of survival. It is an art. It's not two men just flailing away with emotions because they fell out with each other and they're trying to, you know, just purely survive a situation. They've planned to be there. They've planned to outsmart the other one. You can't just technically outdo a fighter, or all the technically good fighters would be the dominant world champion. It's about how you can make the other man think about you, how you can give him something, you know, give him some bait and get him to bite on that bait and realize that he's on the end of a hook, you know, take a man for a walk and set him up on something. And if you look at all the best guys at doing it, you look at Ali, you look at Mayweather, Hopkins, all of these men, they wouldn't wait until fight night to start fighting. The fight would begin with tactics in press conferences and comments made and things done to upset the opponent or to offset the opponent. It's not always about upsetting them, it's about offsetting them. And I just think that's a fantastic. I just think it's just a buzz to do that, to start setting traps and plans and things. And then fight night, then it's about just completing the mission on fighting it. Obviously, the hardest bit of the mission, but completing it, yeah.
Paddy, you're a thoughtful man. I've read some bits and pieces about you, and you say that you take something from somebody new every day or something. You learn from somebody every day. Do you think that's because of the discipline and the experiences you had in the ring and around the ring, and your life would have been completely different without it?
I take anything that any man has spent a lot of time doing away and their life would have been completely different without it, wouldn't they? Doesn't mean it would have been more negative, but it would have been completely different. Look, I'm 50, been in boxing since I was 13, 37, 38 years. And I've been a full-time coach 25 years. But I was blessed to meet Freddie and to get that opportunity. I wouldn't have, after failing as a fighter, I wouldn't have taken the time to believe I could do something as a coach. But now, as I am a coach and you look at other people and you analyze them, you realize there was plenty of other men like that previously. I mean, Customato had one amateur fight and lost it. And that was his experience in the ring. And he was an all-time great philosopher and coach. And, you know, Angelo Dundee boxed in the army. That was it. He wasn't in the pros. So, but I wouldn't have taken the time to kind of realize that, to go back to boxing and think I could do anything as a coach. Then, of course, Freddie comes along, gives me an opportunity of a lifetime. So now I have the opportunity. How do I make the best of it? Well, I had to change how I thought then. I had to believe that I could do something, because if I didn't, as soon as I would walk out of Freddie's gym, sure, I'd be no good again, because the person who I was believing in wasn't there. So I had to think, okay, well, I can do this. So I just studied. I just studied Freddie. I just thought, well, he's excellent at doing what he does in every way, because there's lots of good technicians and they might be able to put game plans together in the gym, but they don't know how to motivate you on fight night and how to connect with individual fighters and individual personalities. And then there's lots of guys who are great at on the mitts and everything else, but they might be no good at wrapping hands. Not that you need to be, but there are all these individual parts or links of being a coach, and Freddie can do absolutely every one of them. So I just thought, well, I'm just a blank book. I'll just copy him. until I realize why the hell I'm doing it, I'll just copy him. So I copied him and did the mitts the way he did the mitts. I would stand directly behind him. I mean, my chin would more or less be rested on his shoulder watching the sparring. And then when the fighters would come back to the corner, I would just listen, because then I wasn't hearing him giving them directions of something that I had seen from an angle 180 degrees differently, and it didn't make sense to me. I was seeing it from exactly through his eyes, looking over his shoulder and hearing what he was telling them. So I just copied him. And then I just thought, well, the only way you can get better is keep getting new information. So keep listening, keep learning. Anybody can teach you something. So, just, you know, every day you wake up, it's a chance to add something new, isn't it?
You described it, you just said, you were a blank book when you were learning. What do you hope that people take from your book, Hands, Hand Wraps and Headaches?
Well, it's funny, me and Teach had a 2 meter whiskey the other day, okay?
Right.
So he came to see me, we had a whiskey together, and I said, so fair play. Fair play to Teach, really, because it was all down to Teach. I just sat with Teach and Dad. Teach was the one who came up with it, who put it together, who wrote it the way it was wrote, and who got the book deal. He's the one who done it all. But he was like, well, let's hope it's a success. And I said, well, it's done. Success is there. We set out to write a book and to get it published. That's done. If it's a success, it's a success. If it's not, it's not. But as far as sales, but as far as to me, we've done what we said we'd do, so there's complete success. Everything else is a bonus. What in the book is, you know, my life up till now, but in a strange way. It's not about just my life. It's about boxing. You have bits in there from Layla, you have bits in there from Liam and Brewster, bits in there from James Tony, bits in there from Vache, all different fighters I've worked with that are talking in there. You get some back take on some of the fights they were involved in. And then, you know, listen, every man and woman struggle in their lives, some big, some small. So you see the vulnerabilities to the struggle, but so far, there's always an answer. I think there always is an answer. When somebody's in the ring, there's always an answer, even if you're getting your ass whooped. Now, you might not be able to do the answer required, but there is an answer. If you have two complete fighters that are able to do everything, they can box, they can fight inside, they got educated jabs, they know how to tie a man up, they got good rig generalship, they got it all. You still pit them against each other. One man wins, one man loses. Doesn't because one man was better than the other as a fighter, but they were better on that night because one made the adjustments more than the other guy. So there's always an answer, it's just who can stay calm enough to realize what I need to do. If you're focusing on the right hand that's hitting you in the teeth, well, you're never going to be able to come up with the defense required to take care of it. Can't focus on the right hand that's hitting you in the teeth. That's got to alert you to what you should do. So when you're just going through problems, you got to think, all right, if I focus on the problem, I keep getting hit in the teeth. I got to come up with, what do I do to overcome this problem? I think you might get that in bits and pieces out of the book.
Well, it sounds absolutely brilliant. It's called Hats, Hand Wraps and Headaches. It's out now with Pitch. It's by Paddy Fitzpatrick and with Teach, of course. Paddy, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you today. If people want to find you, can they find, are you on the internet? Is there a Twitter thing or?
I'm on Instagram and I don't know what the name of it is. So if you stick in Paddy and Fitzpatrick.
It should pop up.
I'm sure it'll come up somewhere, brother.
Well, this is called Hands, Hand Wraps and Headaches, Life on the Inside of Boxing. It's by Paddy Fitzpatrick. Paddy, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you today.
Yeah, man, thank you very much. Appreciate your time, brother.